AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. The upside recovery in wheat futures was challenged in early trade, but buyers retook control of the market in the afternoon trade. Corn followed wheat, while the soy complex moved up from session lows. Lean hog futures were on the defensive throughout the session, as live cattle futures reversed early losses to close sharply higher.
Live from the rain-soaked Southern Outpost via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we chat with Jim Emter from Van On Company. Directly following the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, welcome the host of AgriTalk, Chap Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, it kind of feels like we're off to a better start than what we got this morning. Are you there?
I'm just kidding. I'm here.
Are you there? I love it. Yeah, we had a little bit of technical difficulty at the start of this morning's hour of AgriTalk. This afternoon, yeah. We're off and rolling, baby. Everything
smooth
feels good.
Smooth sailing, baby. It really, really does. Smooth as yogurt.
Yeah. How's the weather down your way?
Well, I don't mind it. Okay. And I know the dirt was a little thirsty down here around KCUA. Uh-huh. I think the whole, northwestern quadrant of the great state of Missouri was a little dry-ish. And so we're happy for it. Yeah, we're good.
Okay, you've got some rain falling right now, some thunder in the area, is that right? Thunder and lightning?
A little bit, yeah. The dog doesn't like it, so he's down by my feet.
Oh.
Yeah, he's still down there.
Well, yep. You'd be a good boy down there.
He's a good dog.
Yeah, yeah. The rain is expected to move into eastern Iowa this afternoon, and then... All right, excuse me, not this afternoon. Overnight, tonight, it'll be here for when most of us are getting up in the morning. It'll probably be raining. Mm-hmm. Then it's going to stick around. It sounds like on and off on Fridays, potential for some severe weather over a wide swath of the Midwest on tomorrow, on Saturday, and again on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So we've got an active weather weekend. We need to watch out for it.
Sure do. Some of all it right. could be severe-ish. I mean, let's just be careful. That's all.
That's right. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Glad that you're joining us this afternoon. Jim Emter, Van On and Company, is our guest analyst today. I'm looking forward to the conversation there. Leading up to it, we'll have Oliver right after we get some markets from Davis.
Well, Chip, export sales of wheat in the weekend of April 18 totaled 82,000 for old crop and nearly 372,000 for new crop shipments. Old crop sales were in line with trade expectations, new crop sales at the high end of expectations. Deteriorating hard red winter wheat crop conditions and a forecast calling for more dry conditions in western production areas started the upside price recovery in wheat futures. Now, chart watchers seem to be in control of the market, with HRW futures posting a sixth consecutive higher close. With a low range open and a high range close, today's close in July HRW futures, the highest since January 29, Chip. July HRW wheat, 10.5 cents higher, 640.5. July SRW wheat up 7.5 to 620.5. July spring wheat closed at 698.25. That's up 12.75 cents.
Do not underestimate the power of the charts, the technical indicators in this wheat market right now. It feels like that's got control of the wheat markets.
July corn futures opened steady, spike support at yesterday's low, and was trading slightly higher by mid-morning. Corn slightly extended those gains into afternoon trade as wheat futures slightly stretched out to a double-digit advance. Export sales of corn in the weekend at April 18 totaled nearly 1.3 million metric tons, slightly topping trade expectations, with Mexico, South Korea, and Japan topping the list of buyers. Argentine crop watchers, Chip, continue to assess damage to the corn crop, and importers may be starting to extend coverage of U.S. corn. May corn futures 3.25 cents higher at 441. July corn up 3.5 cents, 452. December corn futures closed at 476.25. up 3.5. Sounds like the weather may be working against Argentine farmers when it comes to these leafhoppers, Chip.
Yeah, I think it probably is. And the way that this disease is taking bushels off of the Argentine crop late in the year. Hey, the export sales number, 1.3 million metric tons, that's a good number. That's got to be some demand slipping up to the U.S. from Argentina.
Yeah, baby. Export sales of 211,000 metric tons of U.S. beans in the weekend of April 18 fell short of trade expectations. Mexico topped the list of fresh buyers along with Indonesia and Vietnam. Southern Brazil is expected to see heavy rains over the next 10 days, and that could cause damage to beans still in the field, and it will make it difficult for Brazilian exporters to fill vessels in a timely manner. July beans posted a high range open, then fell through support to trade moderately lower at mid-morning. Late strength in corn and wheat futures helped bean prices climb back to the opening range for the close. May bean futures 3.25 cents lower, 11.62¾. July beans down 1¾ cents to 11.79¾. November beans closed at 11.75½. That's up a whole penny on the day, Chip.
Soybean meal export sales in the week of almost 308,000 metric tons. That was a good number. And soy oil sales, 16,200 metric tons. That easily topped trade expectations.
Cotton export sales weekend at April 18, just over 177,000 running bales. July cotton today, 7 points higher, 81.08. On your livestocks, beef export sales, 15,200 metric tons, slightly ahead of the four-week average. Cattle erased early price losses and closed solidly higher, with June futures posting an upside reversal. June fat cattle, 255 higher, 177.80. May feeder futures, $2.15 higher, 246.25. And on the snout side, pork export sales, 28,800 metric tons, 25% behind the four-week average. But June futures opened on session highs and posted a low range close. May hogs 207½ lower, 95.27½. June off $2.45 to 105 on the snout. Corrective trade in the hogs, Chip?
Yeah, a little bit happening there, no doubt about it. All right, thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. How you doing, Oliver?
I'm doing well, Chip. How about yourself?
Doing real good. That nice reversal in cattle today.
Holy smokes. Yeah, I had to get my neck brace out mid-morning. We were all over the place today, but nice to see the lower prices rejected and buyers step in. Really, you know, it just takes us back to kind of where we started the week, finished Monday's trade at that 50% retracement for the June contract, 178.42. That's going to continue to be, you know, kind of a pivot pocket for us, or a pivot point. If we can get out above 178.42, 178.5, I wouldn't be surprised to see some additional pressure or some momentum come into the market. I think one of the things that might keep some of the bigger players at bay from buying is just the lingering headline risk with regards to the bird flu. But with that said, you know, funds, they're only net long 30,000 contracts right now. So the risk of long liquidation, it just isn't there like it was a couple months ago.
Right. Yeah. No question about that. Dude, this wheat trade, six in a row, it's turned into something.
It has turned into something. And we're just kind of hovering right near the 200-day moving average. It's something that we haven't traded on in what seems like a lifetime. You know, wheat's one of those markets that can just keep going in either direction.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if we can get out above some of those moving averages that haven't been tested in some time. And, you know, talking about the fund positioning in grains, we've been talking about, you know, corn and soybeans forever. They're still pretty short wheat. So if we get out above some of those indicators, that might be enough in and of itself to trigger some more momentum.
No doubt. No doubt. All right. Feels good. Feels good. Oliver, thanks, buddy. You have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Chip. You too.
All right. That's Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Okay, coming up next, we're going to dive. It doesn't matter if we're talking grain markets, livestock markets. Jim can cover them all. Jim Emter, Van On and Company, is next on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
You suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Crazy, but that's how it goes. Davis, you know what?
What, buddy?
That makes me want to start the conversation with wheat.
The crazy train itself?
The crazy train. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't remember who it was the other day out on X. Posted a video, and I've seen this video in other places. It's of a music class, okay?
Okay.
And the whole class is learning to play the xylophone.
Okay.
And you know what song they're playing? Crazy Train. It's
really
awesome. It's awesome. It is fantastic.
Huh.
And the comment, and I, gosh dang it, it might have been Matt Campbell, might have been Darren Fessler. I think it was one of those two. But it said something about the next generation of wheat traders in training.
Oh, jeez.
It's fantastic.
It sounds about right.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Jim Emter, Van On and Company, is our guest analyst today. Jim, how you doing?
Chip, doing well. Always a pleasure. Should be a fun conversation here today.
Yeah, love getting you on here, man. How's everything? Everything okay?
Good. I had a client call me a rock star today, so that's always nice to start off the day. Then you start with that introduction on the music and your kind words, so now I just have to live up to an expectation, right?
Well, you know, that's not all that hard to do. We can manage that. We can
Perfect.
Manage. Yep. So talk to me about wheat. This is a very nice corrective rally. It's only 6 days in. I get that. But you know, it kind of reminds me of another media thing, and that is this market is and the upside recovery has announced itself with authority in just 6 days. It's put on a heck of a rally.
You know, it comes back to wheat is a streaker. When it moves, it moves. I mean, for months I've heard clients want to try to get on the good side of wheat. And when the tech indicators aren't there, you've got to lag back. But now we activate something and it's like everybody's been, you know, prolonged wanting to be long this wheat market. And now it's a here we go and we get it all at once. So this is a momentum type trade. It's a unique trade. You know, that next generation of wheat traders, boy, is that true. We label wheat as noxious weed. It can grow through about anything. And I think that's something we've got to come back to, is that NW symbol that we've got next to wheat at times, and realize, boy, it's got 9-10 lives. We can try to kill it and frost freeze, we can put it in a drought, we can do this or that to it, but some way, somehow, you know, we come back to finding out, boy, it wasn't what we expected, what maybe somebody else expected. But as we come back to the core, wheat is the one market where you come in here and you look at world carryout numbers year after year after year after year after year. For 6 years now, we've been decreasing the stocks to use ratio and the world wheat ending stocks. And when China holds a good part of those ending stocks, it just brings to reality that if India really has to come and build some reserves, if China has to deal with some floodings at core times, if the U.S. does plant, you know, and did plant less wheat, you know, it brings back that circumstance that, hey, this is the one market other than beans, maybe late season, that actually has some stats going for it. It's just a matter of, though, we've been disappointed so many times in wheat on trying to build a rally. And then when they take it away, they take it away. If it took 6 days to rally, they take it away in two, Chip. And that's what we've got to be attentive to, is try to come in here and say, hey, we want to let this market go, but we have to be realistic about expectations despite the ending stock shrinking worldwide, despite the crop conditions being down 5%. Let's not forget that the average crop condition rating for winter wheat right now is actually 45% good to excellent. We're still at 50. So, you know, after spring wheat last year where we were 20% below the average, but yet produced an average crop, I want to be careful putting too much emphasis on those crop condition ratings and realizing where we're at. Now, price count wise, KC wheat, we're into, you know, first price counts already in a matter of six trading days, as you've elaborated. Yeah. You know, as we look to these next price counts, you know, around this 662 level, if we can get up and get going, Chip, I think we've got to start to be attentive between the 662 and 690 area of saying, hey, is there some risk off that we can bring to the table? If I'm under hedge, can I get my hedges up there? And how can I do so with sanity in case there's something bigger behind the scenes when we got missiles flying and so much uncertainty? We've got to be cautious here too and smart about our approach.
There you go. That's an important point to note. And I want to get to that here in just a moment. And you know, you look at patterns in the market. I look at patterns in the market. And you go back to that late November, very early December upside price recovery that we had. There were six consecutive higher closes in July HRW wheat. Then you go to the upside price recovery that started the middle of January and extended out to January 25th. Okay. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Are you calling? Six are you calling up for some here, Chip?
I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
No,
it doesn't take long to accomplish what wheat wants to accomplish.
Exactly. And that's why I want to talk price counts a little bit, because you look at those cycles and they're 6 days, Chip, and we're already into first price counts, and the second price counts are only 20, 25 cents higher. And my fear is that people aren't going to be attentive. They're busy spraying or in the tractor planting or doing this or that. And all of a sudden they hear in your morning session that, hey, overnight last night, we got up 25 cents, but now we're 15 lower this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's what scares me if they're not attentive to having orders working, that they may miss these opportunities. But yet there's part of me that wants to trail some of this with stops and says, hey, let's let it go on some. Let's shoot for targets on some and let's find the happy medium between both strategies.
Gotcha. Yep. Good. Good. Okay. Could it be something bigger? You mentioned it. I think those are the words that you used. Wheat has rallied in the past, and then all of a sudden the following week, we get some daily export sales announcements. Now, those have since been canceled by China. But after canceling and reworking and retooling exactly where they're sitting, we get a rally like we've had over the past 6 days. It does make me think that there is something bigger behind this. Do you get those thoughts?
I do too. And I think sourcing it back to India, if India starts coming in the market and having to source wheat and, you know, depending on stability and whatnot, if we get a little piece of that, that's the problem, is we're still overpriced. And the dictator of Russia, what they do is such a key component of the flat cash price that we can't lose sight of the overall impact. But yeah, it's got that feel that there's something else that's going to come along. But I'm afraid, Chip, when we certify that news, that might be the high. And you know, it's kind of buy the rumor, sell the fact type philosophy. And so while I want to try to hope for maybe a third price count, I'm going to be disciplined at first and seconds and marketing and then saying I'll defend from there. Okay. Because, again, I'd rather have something and defend it than be too late to the party and wonder, wow, what could have been.
Right.
So.
Right. Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, the market is starting to pay attention to winter wheat conditions, hard red winter wheat conditions in particular. I'm not scared of it at this point. There's no way I'm going to say that, hey, this hard red winter wheat crop is in a world of hurt. Are you?
No, I think I'm going to be very attentive. Honestly, I told the staff the other day when we were talking through some things, I said, be attentive to 2025 wheat. I think that's where, you know, when you talk about a transition to La Nina, Chip, we know that we've had moisture early on in the winter. You know, we had the foundation of some subsoil moisture that we haven't seen in the last few years under the El Nino structure. But now that we transition back to La Nina, I think the bigger attention for me is what, you know, March of 25, July of 25, what those price structures could bring down the road on next year's crop. To me, when we've got a crop that was planted well, had very strong crop conditions for starter, might deteriorate. I mean, we might be 45% here in 2 weeks if we can't catch a western area rain. But let's not forget the eastern parts of Kansas, Oklahoma, parts of Texas are going to get rain in this. And then I come in here and look at the CFSV2 long range models for May and June, and they're actually starting to pump some moisture back in. So this whole transition from El Nino to La Nina has got a very fluid circumstance around it. And I think really what we've got to watch is I'm already seeing where these model trends and the meteorological forecasting are easing on some of the extreme drought and how quickly it comes late June, July. And I think that's the big parameter by then that winter wheat's going to be harvested. If we can keep some rain coming in spring wheat country, we could have a very big crop up in that area with good quality. You know, we just cannot lose sight of what is here and now, and that is still a problematic market versus what could be maybe in 2025 as we deal with more dynamics and potentially that La Nina circumstance. So I want to be attentive to next year's crop for that bigger bull potential. For this year's crop, I want to be disciplined into those first two price counts.
Perfect. Perfect. You know, and Jim, the thing is, we can talk about Russia and Ukraine. We can talk about crop conditions. We can talk about Australia. We can talk about China, potential buys and all of that. The fact of the matter is, once the charts get a hold of the wheat market, they're going to the charts will direct trade for a period of time. So we cannot lose track of that as we're trying to figure out exactly where that market is going and the influence that it is going to have on corn trade and on soybean trade, which is what we are going to talk about next. We are in the middle of the conversation with Jim Emter, Van On and Company, here on AgriTalk.
Let's go to the markets page at profarmer.com and check today's closes, where July HRW wheat futures were 10.5 cents higher at 640.5. July SRW wheat up 7.5 to 620.5. May corn futures 3.25 cents higher, 441. December corn futures closed at 476.25. That's up 3.5 cents today. May soybean futures 3.25 cents lower, 1162.75. November beans closed at 1175.5. That's up a penny today. July cotton today, 7 points higher, 81.08. On your livestocks, June fat cattle, $2.55 higher, 177.80. May feeder futures, $2.15 higher, 246.25. And June lean hog futures down 245 to 105 even. Get more market news every market day. Visit tryprofarmer.com.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us. We are in the middle of a conversation with Jim Emter, Van On and Company. Jim, let's jump over to the corn market. How much the wheat market has had an influence on what the corn market's been doing here over the past couple of, well, at least the past week, right?
Oh, it sure has. I think anytime you look at markets that try to build out, Chip, we always like to see wheat as a leader. You know, that's helpful. You know, the corn market now has a corn farmer that is entering the planter, that is finding safety and refuge in there. And I think the farmer selling has slowed. You get a push on, to some degree, the cash side of things, trying to generate some old crop from users and exporters that need movement here. And I just think the conglomeration of that has allowed us to at least maintain initially and then build off what really started as a corrective move towards the end of February. We got that initial measuring rally, and then we did nothing for basically an entire month and 2 weeks. And then finally, wheat have given us a little perk up here to give us some hope and optimism that maybe we can go after possibly the first, if not the second price count in old crop and new crop corn. So nice structure. Thank you, wheat. Now let's go get the job done, Chip.
Yeah. Okay. So do in corn what you did in wheat. What are some of those targets, some of those prices up there that you're looking at for some selling opportunities?
Well, I think the biggest thing first and foremost is let's look back to crop insurance just for a second. When we look to the base price that we had at 466, every market except for one, which was the 2013 market out of the last 20 years, we've been able to get at least 5% over base price. This is one of the big things we used last year when we were down in the low fives to give us confidence we could come back over 590, possibly get to six. And then we watched that 629.75 market come out of nowhere on hot, dry forecast. 5% over spring price is 489, Chip. So I want to start with that. That's something that we've been looking at initially. Now, what's very unique about this is if I look to a retracement count rate now that is, you know, around the 50% mark, and if I look to a baseline of extension, which is the first price count, they all point to 487 to 489. So that's going to be the big, you know, we got to get over this 477 hurdle first. But an extra 10, 12 cents could be all the difference of us seeing great opportunities, you know, not just off the December, but we are seeing some of the wider carries we have seen for this point in the year, meaning from Dece to March, from Dece to July. That means we could be knocking on the door of over $5 futures in March and realize today we're talking 505 July 25 corn. So grain that you could put in the bin. If we can get a little bit higher, we're going to be talking $5 cash plus potential. And I think there's a lot of folks in the upper Midwest that would love to see $5 cash on old crop corn. What I'm saying is with strong carries, this rally and the price count starting at 487 off the Dece, you could see some good opportunities of $5 cash on anything stored for next year's or this year's crop next year's spring, summer. So I think we got to pay attention to that. So 487's first count, 497 second, 507 third, and then maybe a dream count of 528. But I'm not holding my breath for that much out of corn. I really think this 487 to 497 is going to be a key area for this corn market.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit more about the carry that's in that corn market. What's it telling you?
Here's the first thing that we got to digest. Why in the heck is corn rallying and carries are growing right now, Chip? You know, that's something that, you know, even in our office, I'm going to admit, we're scratching our heads a little bit to say, all right, what's the lead indicator here? Because a lot of times I like spreads tipping the cards as to what futures are going to do. And if I'm seeing spreads grow and carry, we know because of high interest rates and incentive to farmers, that should exist. But that's unusual to see a rally in market and spreads widening. So it makes it very tough for me to get super bullish on a 507 or 528 price count when I'm getting negative indicators out of some spreads and also seeing the downward linear regression that we're stuck in corn. I just don't think this is a big changing market. I think this is a golden opportunity in a bear market that we need to be attentive and ready for, and that I think greater spreads are to come down the road. But, you know, we've offset some of our spreading here a little bit just to say, thank you very much. Let's take what we've got. Let's see if we can get a, you know, May, June rally and then, you know, do some other things here. So I just think a high attentive nature of view in corn that this is opportunistic and a defense strategy that says if we ever get above 529 chips, something bigger's happening. But from here to that level, it's just status quo downward linear regression, in my opinion. Do your marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. One other thing on corn here. There's some basis strength out there in areas, northwest Iowa, southern Minnesota. Your area is showing some basis strength. What's going on?
Well, I just think the users were so well bought up through, you know, what I'm going to call the late winter, early spring months, that they knew there were gaps here, but they just were semi-confident that they could push for it. And now that the farmer's busy, we'll see if these little windows create opportunities. But there are pushes. There is demand. And I think this you know, hang up on Argentina a little better than expected export demand has created more competition from the ethanol plants. And again, so the good exports that we see weekly is just getting everybody to perk up and have to compete for a little bit of corn right now. And I think that's a healthy environment. I'm glad to see it for producers' sake, because what was it, with over $5.5 billion sitting in the farmers' hands as of the last stocks report? Chip, we got a long ways to go to get this grain moved into more of the user slash exporter hand. Like I said, we're just seeing those pushes. I think the futures incentive fits, and I think there's profit margin of what we've seen with the base fuel additive that allows these users to step up and say, hey, we can get this to work. We're sitting good. We haven't had to bid yet this year in an aggressive manner. We're okay to do this for now, and we anticipate late May, June, July, we're going to have plenty of crop from the farmer. So I think that's the mentality right now, is to push a little bit now to get what they need for the next 4 to 5 weeks.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Okay. Let's go out to this. What, when you envision how this market is going to trade over the next 30 days, what do you see?
You know, I see a market that still has layers of resistance from the farmer, but right now, if we can keep the farmer at bay a little bit, we've got, you know, funds that need to short cover to some degree, Chip, coming into a May, June, you know, type seasonal philosophy in corn and wheat, coming into a July, August. It's very seldom that we don't see the funds say, hey, I don't know if I want to hold the record position coming into one of the more volatile timeframes, one of the more seasonal uptrending timeframes. So we're very hopeful and optimistic here over the next 30 days that we can see that short covering, but we need the help of weather too. If we put this crop in gangbuster here after this next week, and all weather shapes up and we dry down, Chip, that's the end of our rally, in my opinion, in corn. And I think create some problems in spring wheat and possibly spill over into wheat if we can catch the right rains in winter wheat country over this stretch. So again, I think the optimism strong right now, the chart formations are good, and it's been a while since we've been able to say that, but just be cautious here. Let the market do its thing. But when it starts to show, you know, a turning or corrective nature, I think you've got to be ready, regardless if that's 5 days out or 30 days out. So even though producers are busy right now, Chip, I think they've got to be defensive on their orders and or trailing stops to make sure they get put into marketing when this is over. Because I still see a bear trending market unless we get 60 or 90 days out with some real extreme heat and dry weather. When you guys are out on your crop tours, maybe for beans, maybe we're enduring that, and that's bean saving grace down the road. But for right now, I really think we've got to respect the bear trend, but this is a counter trend seasonal move that we need to be ready to market into, in our opinion.
Yep. Get your price orders in place. That's what I hear you saying. Get them into the market and make sure that you're there before the price gets there. Yeah.
Yep. 487, 497, 507 new crop corn, I think, are great ones. And you might find out on a Sunday night you're hit, and Monday morning you're going to be glad you had them, because it might not be there anymore.
That's right. That's right. Let's jump over to the livestock trade, cattle trade in particular. Good price action in that live cattle market today, Jim.
Oh, we needed it. I mean, what was the Dow down? 700 points at one point this morning. I mean, some bad economic news numbers, stagflation starting to enter the conversations as inflation picks up and as the economy starts to slow a little bit. You know, all the concerns just seem to be there in little pieces. They don't all materialize at once, but we're not out of the woods yet. It's just we've made it further without a disaster than I think a lot thought we could. But when you look to that cattle market, I mean, you talk about a market that finally gets the placement number, finally gets a cattle on feed that we can do something with only a day or two later after the weekend to come in here and nail it with this influenza. Next batch, you know, more dairy pasteurized. I mean, you know, and now we're going to put restrictions on interstate movement of lactating cows. And I mean, it just, the headlines alone just get people to back away. Now, you know, I thought it was, you know, spot on to mention, you know, just on the foundation that the funds have covered some of the position, and that's okay. Very seldom do we see the funds go short from managed money on the cattle side of the equation, but you know, we can't neglect and overlook the amount of negative storylines, the heavy weights. I know the supply story is there, and I think it's going to take a year and a half, 2 years yet to improve the supply line of cattle. I just think it's a different beast than what we've seen in cycles of the past. But I got to be flat honest, Chip. That those weights scare me. And to a large degree, all this headline news makes me nervous about consumptive measures on people thinking twice. I think it's all for a lot of just pure headlines and conversations. I wish we could just get to the point of acknowledging, hey, this is not harmful, continue to go about status quo. But we know how headlines work, and we know how things get distorted as it works through the pipeline.
Yeah, that's exactly right. One thing on those carcass weights, I doubt if they're going away. Once guys figure out that they can feed them to this weight and Packers can process it at this weight, we're not going backwards.
Well, I think you're getting encouragement, Chip, from the Packers saying, hey, these are good-looking cattle. They're grading well. Keep it going because they've got that production line. So when you're getting encouragement, you see that on your dollars. What it does is it covers up the supply problem. So when we get holes and gaps, yeah, we can explode this cattle market, but we've got to be attentive that there also is an interest to, again, expand. And if we get that expansion 2 years from now or a year and a half from now, we could be looking at a total different market. I got a client that always says he's trying to protect against a 2015-type disaster.
Yep.
And 10 years later, we're looking at a 2025 where there's a lot of headlines coming out, Chip. We got to be attentive.
That's right. That is exactly right. Good stuff, Jim. Excellent job. Thank you so much. I look forward to doing this again sometime soon.
That'll be great, Chip. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Excellent. Jim Emter, Van On and Company, here on AgriTalk. All right. We got a little highlighting to do. We're going to do that next with Davis here on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in, your pal Davis Michelson. Right here for you. Chip, up on the upper floors somewhere, someone is practicing a timpani. I can hear it very clear. Yep, there it goes again.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Don't you think that's the Angels bowling? Come on, man. They need a break.
It might be.
It's Thursday afternoon. They've decided to do a little bowling.
You know, fellas, take the day off. Take the afternoon off. It's fine. Whatever it is, it's quite the deal down here. I can hear it right through my headphones and everything. Yeah, definitely. Some good conversations. Let's start with Oliver, Blue Line Futures. Yeah. He kind of liked that cattle recovery today.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he wanted to get too far out over his skis, but he liked it. There's that.
Oh, the timing of it was really good, really positive. And the reason that I say that is because, you know, an afternoon rally and a positive momentum into the end of the day is always cool. It's nice to take that in the cattle market or the hog market because we don't have the overnight trade. But it's nice to take that into the break in action so that, you know, you're almost working with a step forward when the markets open on Friday morning. Now, that's assuming, of course, that we don't have any massive changes in the way that we need to look at these cattle and hog markets between now and then, or the cattle market in particular. So it was a positive day. The other thing is you know, we had the conversation about the H5N1 virus in cattle, the moves by Colombia. It looks like the Dominican Republic, if they haven't done it yet, that they're going to put some restrictions on fresh and chilled beef trade from the U.S., at least from the states where the H5N1 in cattle has been identified. So even though it is in the dairy herd, it is a beef problem if importers make it that way for us. Well, here we are. You know, they seem to be making it that way for us, and the cattle market still found a way to reverse early losses and close with some very positive gains.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it would be easy to be dismissive here, Chip. Help us with some perspective. Colombia, okay, whatever. Dominican Republic, okay. Who cares?
That
complacency on those levels. We're slicing off export demand, bro. And I don't like that at all. I don't want to slice off any. There are no throwaway export customers, if you ask me.
That's right. And that crap spreads like wildfire.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, if it's, you know, it. And Colombia is not an insignificant buyer of beef.
I wouldn't expect.
Yeah. Right. It is an important market. But if it would spread to Japan or to South Korea or any of the Mexico, if it would spread to any of those markets, then it's probably a bigger issue. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, is what the market is. That, I think, not the market needs to be aware of that. Cattle feeders need to be aware of that. And you look at how the market performed today, is it giving you another opportunity to get some coverage in place just in case this stuff escalates on us?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Well, and you know more about this than I do. Was it BSE and an embargo from Paraguay from years ago that was just settled? I mean, my point is export demand doesn't come back quick, especially when it's, you know, the underlying factor is a potential cattle problem.
Well, look, ask China. No, I should say ask Canada how long it takes to reopen a market because they're still struggling to get beef back into the Chinese market. Now, U.S. beef has made its way back into the Chinese market and has for quite some time, but China's still struggling because of BSE.
Yeah.
From 2003 is 21 years ago. 21 years ago, and they are still trying to make that happen.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Yeah.
2003.
I mean, it's pretty phenomenal. It really is.
So suddenly, Colombia and the Dominican Republic seem pretty doggone important.
Oh, yeah.
If they're going to be the first dominoes. Yeah.
Definitely. So, but let's get this cleared up as quick as we can. It's like we talked about this morning on the show. We've got to have not just USDA. We've got to have the entire industry get in front of this and get a better handle on exactly where things stand with how widespread it is and so on. So first things first.
Yep. There's one thing that I want to pull so much here from Jim Emter from the Van On Company, but he said something that people have talked about before. We've talked about it before. Get your orders in and get in the tractor and forget them.
Yeah.
You know, you may have a little bit of rain delay here to sort of sit and stew and sort this stuff out if you haven't got it figured out. I think there's a couple of days coming up where you might have some think time, Chip.
Yeah, absolutely. So you take advantage of any downtime that you do have out of the tractor and just make sure that you are prepared for what might happen in the corn, soybean, wheat markets. Get some orders in that'll get you to levels on old crop sales, on 24 crop sales that you're going to be comfortable with. Okay. All right. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for May 1st through the 5th. Wow. We are looking at above normal temperatures and high odds of above normal temperatures across the entire Corn Belt. It's it's the eastern 7/8 of the country, I guess, is what we're looking at for above normal temperatures. We've got above normal precipitation, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas. Western Arkansas, Missouri, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, and Western Illinois there. Near normal to below normal in the Eastern Belt. We got the free-for-all tomorrow morning.